This morning, America's First News starts right after this. When shopping for car insurance, consider this. Geico has been saving people money on car insurance for over 75 years. So if you're serious about savings, it's simple. Go to geico.com. After 75 years, they know how to save you money.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
A warning about Flynn. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka. It is Tuesday, May 9th. Glad you could be with us, and here's what's up this hour.
Former Acting Attorney General Sally Yates says she warned a White House official that National Security Advisor Mike Flynn was at risk of blackmail, but she didn't specify how.
President Trump's latest executive order on immigration is now before an appeals court. Should his previous comments on Muslims be considered?
The United Nations says nearly 250 people fleeing North Africa are missing and presumed dead after two shipwrecks in the Mediterranean Sea.
And how this month's college grads can start planning for retirement today.
So, of course, when you first get your job out of college, you might not be thinking too much about retirement because it's so far away. But, I mean, I spoke to some financial advisors about how to make this as easy as possible because saving early can have so many financial benefits.
Janelle Marte at The Washington Post has a college grad's guide to retirement. She's here in about 20 minutes. Well, former Acting Attorney General Sally Yates has testified that she warned a top White House official that then National Security Advisor Mike Flynn had misled the vice president about his conversations with a top Russian diplomat. Ms. Yates, an Obama administration holdover, testified before Congress yesterday that misleading Mr. Pence put him at risk of blackmail.
All I can say is that I did my job the best way I knew how. I looked at this EO. I looked at the law. I talked with the folks at the Department of Justice, gathered them all to get their views and their input, and I did my job.
As the Wall Street Journal points out, all we know is that Mr. Flynn made a passing reference about U.S. sanctions in his conversation with Sergei Kislyak, the Russian ambassador to the U.S., a reference Mr. Flynn says he forgot. It's not clear what he could have been blackmailed about. So far, the Journal says the only crime we know about in this drama is the leak of Mr. Flynn's name to the press. Federal appeals court judges are now considering whether they should look at President Trump's previous statements about banning Muslims when ruling on his previous immigration order, his revised immigration order. The Fourth Circuit Appellate Court in Richmond, Virginia, is examining Mr. Trump's executive order on visas and refugees. During the campaign, Mr. Trump called for a total and complete shutdown of Muslims entering the U.S. Judge Robert King questioned government lawyers.
He's never repudiated what he said about the Muslim ban. It's still on his website. The district court here found that it's on his website, campaign website, today, or as of the day that he wrote the opinion.
Jeffrey Wall, a lawyer for the Justice Department, said the appeals court should focus on the text of the executive order, as well as what he described as the White House's legitimate concerns about terrorism.
Generally, they shouldn't get much weight because you haven't taken the oath of office to uphold the Constitution. You haven't formed an administration or consulted with them.
A three-judge panel on the San Francisco-based Ninth Circuit, by the way, is scheduled to hold its own hearing on May 15th. A man already behind bars for murder has been recharged in connection with a string of serial killings in Phoenix. 23-year-old Aaron Juan Saucedo is linked to 9 murders and 12 incidents between August of 2015 and July of 2016, last summer, which is 3 more attacks and 2 more murders than originally thought. Most of the killings by a gunman called the serial street shooter took place in a predominantly Latino neighborhood. Phoenix Police Sergeant Jonathan Howard.
No motive yet. We can tell you that the victims, there seems to be no correlation between our victims, no correlation between our victims and our suspect.
Authorities initially thought there were 7 fatal shootings, but police have now tied Mr. Saucedo to 9 killings in all. Charges include homicide, assault, drive-by shooting. Police said the killings were unrelated to a series of 2015 freeway shootings in Phoenix that terrified drivers for a period. It's 10 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
Ransomware is software that can infiltrate your business through email, enabling cyber criminals to hijack sensitive information as ransom for your own data's release. Leveraging Barracuda email security with advanced threat detection can stop a ransomware attack in its tracks. As an added measure, Barracuda Backup allows you to recover your data without having to surrender to extortion. Crime doesn't pay when you protect your business data with Barracuda. Go to Barracuda.com/ransomware to learn more.
Glad you're with us on this Tuesday. French President-elect Emmanuel Macron heads to office primed for clashes with two nationalist rivals on the world stage, President Trump here in the U.S. and Russian President Vladimir Putin. Wall Street Journal Paris correspondent Matthew Dalton says from climate change to the war in Syria, international trade, and the conflict in Ukraine, Mr. Macron has staked out positions at times at odds with the two leaders and clashed at a distance with both on the campaign trail. Matt, explain.
Macron on the campaign trail for a number of months now has been sparring with both of these men at a distance. He has criticized Trump for his attacks on the European Union. Macron is very pro-EU, so he's called out Trump on the campaign trail. He's called out Trump for his opposition to doing something more aggressive on climate change. That's a topic that's very important for the French. And then the clashes with Putin have been quite serious because he's on the campaign trail. He's accused Russia's state-funded media of spreading disinformation and smears about him. And then just recently there was this massive hack of his campaign, and there are some signs that point to potential Russian involvement. And it's, so the relationship could really grow very tense if it comes out that Putin ordered a hack of Macron's campaign. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of what's been happening.
All right. So you say here, while they disagree starkly on trade, globalization, climate change, and immigration, there are a couple of points here for common ground, like stepping up NATO's counterterrorism efforts.
Yeah. So the big security concern of France is Syria and Islamic State. The Paris attacks of November 2015 were planned and orchestrated by Islamic State leaders in Syria. And so this is something that any French president is going to be concerned about. And it's something that Trump has given the fight against Islamic State. He's given a lot of lip service to that on the campaign and since he became president. So I think Trump has called for NATO to do more on counterterrorism, and that's probably something that Macron would be enthusiastic about. So it is an area of potential cooperation between the two men.
Hmm. We're speaking with Wall Street Journal Paris correspondent Matthew Dalton about his story entitled France's Emmanuel Macron set to clash with rivals on world stage, those rivals meaning President Trump and Russia's President Vladimir Putin. What about within Europe itself? How will he get along, say, with Germany's Angela Merkel?
Well, he's very much he's got a very similar outlook to Chancellor Merkel. They're both internationalists. They both believe quite strongly in the European Union and the European project. They both want to do something aggressive on climate change. Neither of the two is, you know, our right-wing nationalists in the sense that Ms. Le Pen was a right-wing nationalist. So I think they're going to have a lot in common. I think the big question is whether Germany is going to support the kind of reforms to the Eurozone, including having a shared Eurozone budget, maybe even mutualizing debt that Macron has supported. So that's kind of going to be the tension there.
Just back to the U.S. for a minute. How would the relationship between Paris and Washington be described right now, and how might it change under Macron?
Under the Obama administration, French President François Hollande and Obama got along quite well. They were very close to each other in terms of their diagnoses of the world's biggest challenges, climate change, international security, the war in Syria. They were pretty close. Now, under Trump, I mean, I think the view in Washington is that Hollande is a lame duck president. and has been for a number of months. So there really, I don't think there really has been a lot of engagement on a president-to-president leader level between the two men.
Thanks, Matt. Wall Street Journal Paris correspondent Matthew Dalton. It's 20 minutes after the hour. On This Morning, Jennifer Koshenka is here with more of America's First News.
According to former President Obama warned President Trump during their November sit-down after the election against hiring Mike Flynn as his national security advisor. That word, as former Acting Attorney General Sally Yates testified, that she warned the Trump White House in January that Flynn essentially could be blackmailed by the Russians because he apparently had lied to his bosses about his contacts with Moscow's ambassador in Washington.
We believed that General Flynn was compromised with respect to the Russians.
The congressional testimony from Yates, an Obama administration holdover fired soon after for other reasons, marked her first public comments about the concerns she raised. The U.S. is considering expanding a ban on most carry-on electronic devices larger than a cell phone on U.S.-bound flights from 10 airports in the Middle East and North Africa to likely include flights departing for the U.S. from Europe and possibly the U.K. Department of Homeland Security officials are weighing the advantages of expanding the ban against disruption. Disruptions it could cause, a decision could come in the next few weeks. U.S. military officials and the State Department are recommending sending at least 3,000 more troops to Afghanistan to fight the Taliban. Under the proposal, military leaders would also regain the authority to target Taliban leaders with airstrikes. U.S. combat operations against the Taliban officially ended in 2014, but special forces have continued to provide support to Afghan troops. It sounds like a horror movie. A recent investigation has found that thousands of bodies may be buried across 20 acres at the University of Mississippi Medical Center, the former site of the state's first mental institution. Officials at the university now face the grim task of pulling 100-year-old bodies out of the ground for scientific analysis. From 1855 to 1935, some 35,000 patients were admitted to what was called the insane asylum. In 2013, construction workers uncovered 66 coffins. Now officials estimate there are 7,000 coffins buried beneath the campus. If you find Oreos a bit boring, you may like the chocolate sandwich cookie's newest flavor, the Firework Oreo. Nabisco has put red and blue sprinkles in the cookies that it describes as popping candy. Food and Wine magazine tried them out, calling them relatively enjoyable and kind of fun for a while.
Well, for a while. There are limits.
I guess.
That's funny. I don't know, by the way, why Oreo would make any cookie other than the double stuff.
Oh, those are too sweet.
No.
You like those?
Oh, man.
Oh, man, they're too much.
Oh, by the dozen I eat them.
Uh-oh, no.
23 minutes after the hour. Thanks for being with us. It's college graduation season. Time for perhaps the most important financial decision of a young adult's life, saving for retirement. Although it's probably near the bottom of your financial to-do list after paying the rent and making student loan payments, personal finance writer Janelle Marte at the Washington Post says opening a retirement account in your early 20s is a major part of adulting and can have lots of financial benefits. Janelle, what do you have?
So, of course, when you first get your job out of college, you might not be thinking too much about retirement because it's so far away. But, I mean, I spoke to some financial advisors about how to make this as easy as possible because saving early can have so many financial benefits. Your money will just have a much greater chance of growing, even if you are only saving a little bit. So that's why the first thing is that you should start right away. It can be a little bit overwhelming to look at the paperwork and come across some terms that you haven't heard of in the past, but if you take care of your retirement account at the same time that you're doing your, you know, essential things like choosing your health insurance plan, you can just get it out of the way, and that way the money is coming out of your paycheck right away, and you don't even notice that the money is missing because you're not used to the check without the savings yeah. being taken out.
Boy, I still think to this day, all those years ago, that was perhaps the most important question I've asked in my life. And it was a guy I worked with at the time at this small radio station, and the benefits package came out, and I asked him, I said, what's a 401k in this dopey government-sounding language, 401k? And he said, sign up and do it now, you know, and just even earning beans back then, you know, it paid off.
Yes, exactly. And another thing to remember is that you can start small. Even if you're not making a ton of money, like I said, having a little bit of money coming out of your paycheck now, you know, there's this thing called compound interest, and that means that any gains you see in the first year, it'll only pile on over time, and you can get away with saving a little bit now, and if you basically, the more you wait, the more you're going to have to save to make up for the difference. So take an example of someone who starts saving at 25, saving 6% of his paycheck, he would basically have a 75% chance of having enough money in retirement, according to an analysis that was done for us by the Employee Benefit Research Institute. Mm. Now, if that person waits until he's older, until he's 40, and he's making more money, he would still have to save more than twice as much of his paycheck just to make up for the difference. So really, time is money, and this is a different way to think of it.
Yeah.
So you just want to start small, and you can always increase it later.
All right, so what if you didn't have a whole lot of, say, finance classes or something in college? How do you know the basics here?
Right, so one of the biggest risks is that you get held up by inertia. You don't know what the terms are. You should maybe just look up the basics and at least know that most plans, most retirement plans, have what's called a target date fund. And this is as close as you're going to get to set it and forget it.
Thanks, Janelle. Janelle Marte from The Washington Post. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. When a state ranks among the top 10 in the country for major new and expanded facilities, that's pure growth. When it's tops for three straight years, that's pure Michigan. Long known as a world leader in the automotive industry, Michigan is also a leader in defense, cybersecurity, mobility, agribusiness, and aerospace. In fact, CNBC rates Michigan among the top 10 states in the country for business. To learn more, visit MichiganBusiness.org.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show. Like us on Facebook or send us an email thismorning@compassmedianetworks.com.
Thanks for being with us on this Tuesday, May 9. Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koshenka. Some of our top stories and headlines. Yates testifies that she warned about Flynn. Appellate judges review the Trump travel ban. Black graduate students at Harvard are hosting their own commencement ceremonies in 2 weeks that will be just for black students. Tiffany Trump will attend law school at Georgetown. The Warriors and Cavaliers are now a combined 16-0 in the NBA playoffs this year. Fitness guru Richard Simmons suing the National Enquirer for saying he had a sex change and a contest to name the next flavor of Oreo cookies. That story in about 20 minutes. The House vote approving a Republican overhaul of the Affordable Care Act is quickly becoming the focus of the emerging battle for control of Congress in next year's midterm elections, with groups on both sides of the health debate running ads. More from Wall Street Journal congressional reporter Natalie Andrews. Natalie, what's trending?
Two different groups, groups on the right, groups on the left, are launching ads either supporting and thanking the people that voted for the health care bill. That's obviously from the Republican side. And there's attack ads that are also launching from two different groups, the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee and this group Save Our Care, which is this coalition of health and liberal groups. So if you live in a swing district, you're going to be seeing a lot of ads early. I mean, the midterm isn't until November of next year, and these groups are already going on air with ads, and they're all kind of pushing toward that midterm goal. Democrats want to change, want to flip the House. They want to use this as kind of a touch point. And Republicans are saying, hey, we campaigned on this. We campaigned on repealing and replacing Obamacare for 7 years, and we just made a giant step. And so these ads, the Republican groups are place or the right-leaning groups are placing ads, and they do say thank you. Thank you for living up to your promise.
All right, so why now? Why a year and a half away from the midterms?
Because they now have a vote where they can pin these lawmakers down. And so the vote was on Thursday, and these groups started going up right after that.
Jeez. Don't you run the risk of the message being lost between now and then, or the, you know, running out of money on, I don't know, what could be a more important message, say, in September?
You do.
Next September,
and I talked to some political experts about that, and he says it's really all about what happens now and then what happens later, obviously. But if the Republicans can kind of put a positive spin on their vote now, and these groups can put a positive spin, then it might not hurt them. But if something bigger happens in September, and these left-leaning groups have already been attacking these Republicans, and then they can attack them on another issue, tax reform is likely next. So if they can keep up the attacks, it starts kind of weighing on these voters who live in those districts.
Speaking with Wall Street Journal congressional reporter Natalie Andrews, she's written a piece entitled "Political Ads Step Up Pressure in Healthcare Debate." All right, so targeted here are basically who? These are Republican members of the House who won in districts that Hillary Clinton carried?
Yes, so there's 23 districts in which Hillary Clinton received more votes than Donald Trump in that district, but it's those voters also elected a Republican congressperson. So they're kind of seen as swing districts where they have enough liberal voters to possibly elect a Democratic member of Congress in the next run. And Democrats need to win 24 seats in order to take the House majority. And so you're seeing, even if they win all 23 of those seats and hold their seats, and the Democrats have seats in which Donald Trump won, then they're still looking at a steep climb.
It's Wall Street Journal congressional reporter Natalie Andrews. By the way, reminder, we can connect on social media. You can friend us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter with the username @ThisMorningShow. If you like a little cynicism and sarcasm, you can follow me directly on Twitter with the username @GordonDeal. It's 21 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. Beyond the headlines now, this morning's Mike Gavin is here with a look at some of the other stories you'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Well, here's a story of a home invasion that went horribly wrong for the invader. According to Fox News, a Tennessee woman answered a knock at her door Saturday night to find a woman holding a flyer about a lost dog. As soon as she opened the door, a masked man stepped into the doorway, grabbed her arm, and attempted to pull her outside. When that failed, police say the masked man pushed the resident back inside the home and shouted, "This is a robbery," as if she didn't know that at that point already. A struggle ensued, during which time the 4'11" tall victim was able to partially remove the mask from the suspect's face. In doing so, she immediately recognized the man as Joe Sotelo, a longtime family friend. She says she also noticed what appeared to be a handgun tucked in Sotelo's waistband. She grabbed a baseball bat from behind the door and fought back in what police described as clearly justifiable self-defense. Two 18-year-old females were also in the house and came to the woman's defense. Together, the three women physically drove Sotelo out of the house and onto the front lawn. He was later arrested. Police say the victim was a foot shorter and 100 pounds lighter than the suspect, but that didn't stop her from teaching him a painful lesson.
Hey, neighbor, you don't come into my house.
Doesn't sound like he had his act together here, to say the least.
No.
And
I think I would have said, hey, here to just clean your bathroom.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and instead of, "Oh, this is a robbery." You moron.
This is a robbery. Yeah, well, good for her, though. And
By the way, was she Italian? Do we know?
That we do not know.
Because I know a 4'0" Italian grandmother who I would go to the other side of the street if I saw her coming down, you know, a dark alley or something.
Yeah.
There's just a certain toughness about the short Italian women or grandmothers that I have tremendous respect for.
Yes, I agree. I think I know a few myself. And Gordon, have you ever wondered how much more productive your kids could be at school if they didn't spend so much time on social media? Four public schools in Madison, Wisconsin are testing that theory by preventing student access to over 30 popular apps, including Snapchat, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, to test whether grades, student behavior, and school safety improve with fewer online distractions. The pilot program shuts down free Wi-Fi access to the apps and is being touted as a way to redirect impressionable students' attention to learning and away from potential dangers. The students, as you can imagine, aren't thrilled about this, though, with some saying that they rely on these apps and the school's Wi-Fi to communicate with their families.
Mm. Yeah, here's the counter proposal that students would like studied, and that is, would they be more productive on social media if they were able to eliminate schoolwork?
Right.
Then they could really become masters of Snapchat and Instagram and the like.
Yes.
Right? I think they would like that. Let's study that.
All the schoolwork is getting in the way
of
the socializing.
Right. Up to 500 selfies per day to become more productive on Snapchat. My kids are fairly responsible. I don't see that as distracting, but I think certainly with my son, he can multitask. Like, he can examine his phone and do his homework at the same time.
Yes.
Although it has lengthened the time it takes him to do his homework, and he admits that.
But as long as it gets done.
As long as it gets done, and he understands that he is wasting his own time.
Yeah,
then I can live with it.
That is something that you can't discount here. That the young people are much more adept at multitasking than we were at that age.
No question.
And it's just because they're sort of forced into it.
Thank you, Mike. 14 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. It's Small Business Month, and Dell is celebrating innovators and job creators in a big way, like up to 40% off business PCs big, even a free 1 terabyte external hard drive with select purchases big. Call 877-BUY-DELL today to connect with a U.S.-based advisor. They're ready to help with tech solutions tailored to your business, like finding just the right Dell PCs with Intel Core processors, because your hard work is more than appreciated, it's admired. Call 877-BUY-DELL today. Glad you're with us. Colleges around the U.S., spurred by fatal student overdoses and grieving families, are distributing life-saving medication and adding on-campus recovery programs as the nation's opioid epidemic worsens. The Wall Street Journal says, like binge drinking and marijuana, the opioid crisis is now entrenched on campus. George Washington University has a student-based support program, and the university is now building its own recovery program. Schools are also distributing the anti-overdose drug naloxone to campus police and even students. Idaho State University and Indiana University of Pennsylvania recently offered training for the overdose reversal drug. The University of Texas at Austin now stocks it at the front desk of its residence halls. The University of Rochester has added more drug counselors as well as case managers who can refer students to outside treatment. Drug company Adapt Pharma is giving 40,000 free doses of its branded version called Narcan to colleges nationwide. 8 minutes in front of the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Koshenka is back with more of America's First News.
Gordon, and Phoenix police have announced a break in the case dubbed the serial street shooter. City Police Chief Jerry Williams says 23-year-old Aaron Sosedo, a former city bus driver, has been tied to 9 deaths that occurred between August 2015 and July 2016.
Sosedo has been in custody for several weeks after his arrest for the homicide of Raul Romero. And today, Sosedo was rebooked into the Maricopa County Jail for 26 additional felony counts.
Police say Sosedo gunned down victims after dark in a largely Latino neighborhood of Phoenix as they stood outside homes or sat in cars. The UN Refugee Agency says nearly 250 people are missing and feared dead following 2 shipwrecks in the Mediterranean Sea in recent days. The International Medical Corps has reported a shipwreck off the Libyan coast on Sunday from which 163 people likely drowned. One woman and 6 men were rescued by the Libyan Coast Guard. Separately, the agency says 82 people are feared dead after a rubber dinghy carrying 132 people sank. After several hours of sailing, 50 survivors were rescued and taken to Sicily. The White House has postponed today's meeting to discuss whether the U.S. should withdraw from the landmark international climate deal struck in Paris under the Obama administration. The second time a meeting has been delayed. President Trump's top advisors appear divided about what to do about the deal. A huge wildfire threatening homes near the Georgia-Florida state line is expected to keep growing after recently escaping the boundaries of the vast Okefenokee Swamp. The fire has blackened more than 210 square miles of swampland so far. While life expectancy in the U.S. has grown overall in the last few decades, not all Americans are benefiting equally, with new research finding significant disparities. A county in South Dakota that includes the Pine Ridge Native American Reservation had the lowest life expectancy in 2014 at 66.8 years. Clusters of counties in Kentucky, West Virginia, and Alabama, and several states along the Mississippi River also had some of the lowest life expectancies. In contrast, a cluster of counties in Colorado had the highest life expectancies, with Summit County topping the list at 86.8 years.
Like a 20-year difference.
Yes,
in
it's
expectancy.
Astonishing.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Thank you, Jen. 6 minutes now in front of the hour. Thanks for being with us. For those who think original Oreos are too boring, Nabisco has announced the chocolate sandwich cookie's newest flavor, the Firework Oreo, which Jennifer referenced previously. Meanwhile, officials at Oreos have also announced a $500,000 prize if you can come up with its next Oreo flavor. The Oreo contest runs through July 14. They'll be taking submissions through Twitter and Instagram using hashtag MyOreoCreation. Some people have already started. Someone named Thomas suggested chocolate mousse Oreo. That has to be an early favorite. Another suggested hazelnut coffee Oreos. cheesecake Oreo, proposed by someone named Solar Blue on Twitter. It would also make my probably top three. Some see an opportunity, too, for a healthier cookie. An Instagram user suggested acai berry Oreo. Oh, go away. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koschenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.